I think we're live. I believe we're live currently. Tom,
yeah, go. Cool. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Homie and the Dude, episode 18. And we are here today with Kels Hayward. Kels is a badass illustrator, DJ, and skateboarder as well. So we're really psyched to delve into all of those subjects and wherever else the conversation goes. Before we do that, though, we're going to hit our sponsor, who is Veast.kitchen. Veast stands for a vegan feast, and Veast is based in Bristol. They do carry out on Thursdays and Saturdays. If you're interested, check out their menu and their webpage at Veast.kitchen. You need to order in advance to receive your food on Thursday or Saturday. The food is awesome. We know it. We've tried it. So we stand behind it. If you're a vegan or vegetarian or even a meat eater that's, you know, want to explore, we recommend it highly. Lastly, guys, we are growing, and we're growing pretty fast, so we're really excited about that, but we want to even hit the turbocharge even more. So if you're watching, please hit us with what we call the Holy Trinity. So that is, one, share at least one of our posts or our podcasts across any of your preferred social platforms. Two, like and follow our Facebook page. And three, yes, the Holy Trinity. Three is subscribe to our YouTube channel. Thanks, guys. All right, Kels, welcome.
Hello, hello, hello.
How's it going, man?
Yeah, really good. How are you guys?
Good. Let me just say one thing. We usually have a set that we have done these from. So Bodhi and I are usually in one location. And we have our guest on a Zoom call in another location. Those of you that have watched our shows before notice that we are not there. So, Boats, do you want to just give us a bit of an update on why we're all remote today?
So, actually, I'm currently in self-isolation because I have a surgery tomorrow. Finally, the final update after weeks of dealing with bullshit. I'm finally having my surgery tomorrow. So I've been self-isolating because of COVID and whatnot. They don't do surgeries if you've got COVID, obviously. So I've been self-isolating, and that's why me and Tom are apart at the moment. But hopefully coming next week, we should be back together and it should be all good from there going forward, which will be nice.
Kels.
Yeah.
What up, dude?
Yeah, good. Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Is that the surgery? Is that all going? So that's going ahead then. And are you nervous about that?
Yeah, man. I really am not a fan of going under. So for me, I'm okay with like local anesthetic. It doesn't bother me. But when I get put under general, I do get really panicky before. I don't know why. I'm just not a fan of it. But I think actually the biggest impact of the whole thing though comes afterwards. I actually come away from most surgeries really emotional, actually, and typically quite angry for some reason. I don't know why. I wake up really angry. So that's something I'm nervous about because my girlfriend has never seen me wake up from general anesthetic yet. In the 2 years that we've been together, I haven't had any general. Before that, I had loads though, actually, just before I met her. So
gonna be a bit of a test then.
Yeah, it's gonna be an interesting experience for her. But either way, it's got to be done, and I'm ready to just get it done at this point.
Yeah,
yeah. It's been for a while now.
So, dude, we looked at, you know, did a little bit of background stuff, and we basically divided out your social sort of exposure on different platforms to skating, illustrating, and DJing. So
yeah,
if you were to look at those three, which one would you want to talk about first? Because we like to talk about all of them, but lead us on what you're most interested in.
I'd say that like art is kind of what I spend the most of my time doing and kind of takes up the majority of my time, kind of thing. So that would be the main one. If I had to put them in an order, it would be art is like my main focus in everything, and then probably like music and DJing, and then I fit skating as much as I can around those two things, I'd say.
Okay. With the art, dude, your art is of a very particular style. I'll bring it up here in a minute. I'll do a little screen share and I'll display some of that in a second. tell us at the moment, like, what's kind of inspiring you? Because you seem to have, especially we kind of noticed, so we scrolled through your Instagram and had a look, and I've been following you for a little while now, so I've been looking through your art, and we absolutely love it, for starters.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Cheers, guys.
It's changed a lot. Like, your art has progressed loads in the Instagram clips that you've been posting and whatnot. February, though, you've hit this more consistent, like, I guess, style. What's kind of inspired you to then find this style?
The stuff on my Instagram is actually, like, if you scroll down, some of it is, I think it used to be like 7 years old, some of the stuff, but I've recently deleted down to like about 2 years, maybe a year and a half, some of the stuff is. So, like, through uni, they give you so many different like projects and briefs and stuff. The thing that really, like, stood out to me most is probably the editorial, like, project, where in end of second year, where they were just, you have to, like, make really fast responses to, like, a different subject. Okay. But you're also trying to, like, let's say you had, like, a news article or something that you were creating, like, an editorial illustration for. If you want to look at that image, and that kind of image says something extra, like a little bit of like your, like a view upon it, if that's using like a visual metaphor or something like that, but that's kind of helped me really, like, more of like my content and the way I worked, I think that really
So uni kind of pushed you in a direction that really allowed you to kind of find a bit more of what was in, I guess, inside, in a weird way.
Yeah, like how to respond to content, and kind of the more, like, to do with the way I think about it and stuff like that.
How would you describe what this phase that you, it looks like there was a bit of a shift in about March or so into this kind of style that you've had to date so far. What has been around that?
From March, that's pretty much after I finished, that's like end of uni. So I'm not too sure. At uni, I was really focusing for the whole of third year on like one project, on this one kind of picture book that I just put all my time and effort to. And after uni, I had a bit more time to think about kind of what work I wanted to make and stuff like that. It's more quick turnaround, I'd say. Again, because like now I'm not at uni, I've got to make work a bit quicker. And it's just kind of so I'll kind of sit down and kind of think what inspires me in that sense. But yeah, I don't know. So visually, maybe they're a bit more simplified, I guess, if I'm churning them out quicker. I'm not sure.
There's definitely like messaging though inside of them that, I mean, definitely you could see some. Environmental.
Loads of it's inspired by the environmental crisis. Like, I feel it's such a huge thing that's affecting everyone, everything, and a lot of my work, I'm trying to focus on that, even if it's just getting a little message out or just some kind of influence, even if it's minute and small. I like to try and think that it would make a difference, I like to hope so, that it makes some people think about it, I guess. Yeah,
I like your, I mean, the colors are distinct, and it seems like there's, you know, for in that body of work for the last 6 months or so, there's a lot of, would you call them pastels, or, you know, that sort of palette?
Yeah, more like a pastel palette, I guess. I used to do really dark colors and with kind of similar tones, and the images just didn't really pop very well, like they didn't stand out. If you go back to some of my later stuff, the colors don't really stand out as much, but recently I've been trying to focus on color a lot more, which is something that I didn't do before. Like before uni, I'd only draw black and white pencil drawings. Like, color wasn't something that I even thought about until about the second year.
Do you know what, dude? I was gonna say with your drawing. So two things that I literally said just before this podcast while we were looking through art. Firstly, before I said, Tom, my PC is not wanting to do screen sharing because of all the stuff going on. So if you can bring up Kel's Instagram and share it, then that'd be amazing. I actually said to Tom earlier, Kels, while we were looking at it, that your earlier stuff is definitely darker. Like I was going to say that it definitely there was a point where it suddenly became really bright and colorful. And I was really interesting. And the other thing was, I was like, I would love to get some of this like tattooed on me. I'm a big fan of like tattoos and whatnot.
Thank you, man. Cheers. Yeah.
No, it's really good art is what I guess is the compliment there. But I would be happy to stain myself forever.
Yeah.
I guess for me, the one thing that it comes down to, though, is at the end of the day, I don't really do a lot of color with my tattoos. I'm typically like you from my arms. I have one tiny bit of color in this one. Typically, I'm black. Yeah. Your color, yours are so good. I literally said to Tom, I was like, I want to get his stuff tattooed, but it's so colorful. Like it would need to be so color packed. It would be so hard for anyone to tattoo that, I think.
Yeah.
Are you guys seeing this screen share?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, a few of these really, really resonated with me. Of course, Bodhi, we had a good chuckle with the melon grab. That was great because Bodhi.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But no, like you can tell there's a message, a statement about the environment, about the world, about kind of psychology as well, about you know kind of how people are feeling these days. So you know, there's a couple that popped out here. So if there's anything you want to comment on, Kels, do so. I know there's a couple I want to talk about. Bodes, if there's anything you see that you want to talk about.
Yeah, I'm quite interested because all my pictures, drawings, they kind of focus people. It's a lot. I do find that my work's about how people are relating, reacting to the environmental crisis and stuff like that.
I like the girl. I'm a big fan of the girl within the head. I think I can't imagine how hard it was to draw that side face at the perspective it is. That must have been pain in the ass.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love really that too. Yeah. I love also, I mean, I really love that as well. That's the one that really popped out for me. I'm not sure why there's, you know, there's this element of, what is it like, AIE, ex machina, you know, just sort of, parallel some like parallel universe type, you know,
like robot. Black Mirror kind of thing.
Exactly. And then I think that I love the one right next to it as well with the, you know, the dude that's, you know, underwater, that's basically the support and the foundation for
that was that was based on in Iceland. They've created these houses, these homes that they will rise with the sea level. So to combat rising sea levels, they're like houses on these like giant like stick structures that you can actually like crank them up so that in like, I don't know, however many years as it goes up, then they can just raise the houses with it. I mean,
That's insane.
Yeah, it is insane. It's really clever. I mean, it's not focusing on the issue at hand, but it is a way of getting around it, sure.
That's called preparation. They're
at
the moment, but they're so fucking prepared.
Yeah.
No, need some of that shit in Florida right now because that's coming.
Is it flooding over in Florida?
Well, I think there's actually a big storm coming, but as far as like just look, global warming and the rising seas.
Yeah.
Like Florida is definitely going to be, they say, well, I mean, it's one place of many. There's places in Spain as well. Just, you know, any coastal area is going to have to have, you know, some sort of consideration for majorly rising water. So
I was going to ask, is Florida coastal? Because I'm really bad at my geography.
It's basically like, if you looked at, it's kind of like a peninsula. And so it's got coast all the way around the entire thing. It's a narrow thing. So it's got two different sides and two different feels of the coast to it. But yeah. So the girl was more of a Black Mirror inspiration, that sort of.
It was more to do with kind of like the subconscious and like the person, like who's driving, like, you know, you're yourself in your head and you're kind of, you're driving yourself. I don't know, but you know, you get that voice inside your head that is yourself. Yeah, kind of thing.
Both share that analogy that you had the other day about that we are like basically like, operating this like flesh and bone.
So it was, I said this to Tom and Tracy the other day. It was a weird thought that someone had presented to me. And it's basically that we are not actually a like body or a skeleton. We are a brain with inside a body. And we are just a brain that is controlling a bone mech with muscle and skin like armor on top of the bone mech.
Yeah.
And we're actually just the brain inside the head, you know?
So
it's just a weird one, but yeah, no, I think do you know what I like about all of your stuff, Kels, is interesting to me is it also not all of your people are perfectly like anatomy like correct. Some of them are a little bit more stretched and then like
this one,
yeah, to me like it
that's such a stupid dude.
It adds, like dynamics to your drawing. Like I think if you had just done, you know, like typical people in some of these drawings, it wouldn't be as good. Also, I've noticed that obviously you use a lot of your art now as your like album art for when you're doing like your DJing stuff. I looked on your SoundCloud. Yeah. You're using.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, of course.
Good research. I don't tend to post that too much.
No, yeah, dude. I took a deep dive on some of your SoundCloud. I'm actually a big fan. It's some of your music is really, really nice because I'm not one for electronic music. Typically I have a very specific kind of mind with electronic music, and your beats are pretty nice, dude. Your beats are real nice.
Thank you. Cheers. Thank you.
No, yeah, dude, it's fat. It's real nice.
So this one here is I won't dwell on these too much, but I'm just like looking at ones that really pop out. This one is a piece of a bigger piece, which is this one here. So what's going on? Talk a little bit about that. That's pretty cool.
If the piece towards the left was kind of, that's when I was making this book, because a lot of this is taken from this book. And that's kind of how it was laid out on the book. It's like a narrative that flows through.
This one here?
The one in the middle.
This one, okay. More like a comic booky, like it's got the panels.
And... Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly that, kind of like a comic book. So this was about firefighters trying to... In Louisiana, they're losing like a football-sized pitch of land every 45 minutes, which is crazy. When I found that out, I was a bit taken back, like because it's just a bit of an insane fact. But this is kind of based on that and how the firefighters are responding to that and like flood rescue and stuff like that and trying to prevent stuff kind of like that. This, I don't know if it goes through, but that's a little firefighter and he's in his bath, and then there's a crack in the bath and it's spilling out, and then the kitchen, you don't have a bath in the kitchen, bathroom's like filling up and he kind of like sinks under, and then in the end like it's all flooded out and he's just kind of left a bit exhausted. He's gone through the trials, he has to pull the plug out and all the water goes down. It gets real small. It's like about that big in a bathtub, but yeah.
Do you know what I really like about it, actually? So two things I want to just mention about this is when the middle one on the layout, I love the water kind of coming down the side of the panels. That's some like beautiful, like comic books don't do that enough in terms of breaking. I love comic books. When they break the fourth wall and cross panels and do things like that, I'm such a big fan of that. It's so creative and different. The other thing I really love is how you've got the cross section of floor, and with the water filling up, you can see it like almost like wobbling on top of then the floor, which is underneath. I fucking love that as well.
Thank you.
So with this, I'm guessing. So with that one, you know, you heard something and then you turned that into like your own interpretation of art. Is it typical? Yeah. You will hear some sort of either like news story or fact information and then push that into your art, into your creation?
Yeah, that's that kind of thing that is what I use to inspire myself. You know, when I was mentioning about the editorial, kind of how that helped me and like work out the way I work, because that's exactly what I was doing then, because some of these were like editorial articles, like news articles, and I use them to kind of inspire and like create artwork from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so are you, so you've created these, what is the sort of the medium? Is it canvas or are they prints, or how are you now sort of presenting them to the world besides digitally?
So I will draw, just do a rough sketch of my sketchbook, and then I will draw it out on a piece of paper. And then I'll scan that piece of paper in, and then do it digitally. But all I'm left with, like, physically is just an outline. It never really goes much more than that, but I would love to do, like, get more into screen printing or something like that. Because with, like, if I made the color palette a bit more minimal, like maybe a maximum of 4 colors, then they could make screen prints out of them or something like that.
Okay. I like the idea in terms of screen printing, because your again, your colors pop so good. If you had a t-shirt that was, you know, either a solid black or something that contrasts your like crazy colors, yeah, dude, it's there's definitely viability for that 100%. So you said you go from sketch to digital. That's so interesting to me, because we've had a couple of artists on, and every single one of them has said that they pretty much start on like some sort of iPad or something like that and do the sketch on there, and then like finish doing all the like stuff. So why do you stick traditionally with the pen as well, pen, pencil and paper?
Well, I like the analog feel of like pen to paper and stuff like that, but it gives a really imperfect line. Like, if you zoom in on my work, you'll look that the lines are actually really not badly drawn as such, but not like they're wobbly and there's bits wrong with them, which I kind of like. I feel like it maybe it adds character or something, but that's just personal preference, I guess.
No, I totally get that. It's kind of complementary to the feel of the artwork as well, right? So the artwork is showing sort of an imperfect world with a lot of problems, and the actual, you know, the style that you've chosen is consistent with that as well. So it's really cool.
Yeah, I had that issue with adding text to work for so long, because I've got really bad, like really bad handwriting, absolutely awful. If like someone commissioned me to print an album cover, I'd draw everything by hand, and then I'd add text, and I feel like it wouldn't match up. It didn't feel complete. And then eventually I just started being like, well, I'm just going to draw it out by hand. And even if it looks really bad, then at least it will fit, kind of thing. And that seemed to work better, even if it like was wobbly and kind of a bit messy, with text. I think that helped.
I think it fits. I was just looking at the melon grab one. Like, yeah, dude, I think it fits. It's interesting, dude, because do you know what? As someone who I can speak to you about, like, about the pain and suffering of handwriting and that kind of shit. So actually, I'm super dyslexic myself.
Tom was saying,
I'm super dyslexic, and actually growing up in Spain, I was taught to write cursive. So I was taught to write everything joined up, and like they were brutal about how you write every letter, and it has to be like, got to England and they're like, cool, write print. So now I'm
that has been frustrating.
Yeah. This weird jumble of like print and cursive. And so, dude, my handwriting, like, I'm not sure, here, I'll just hold this up so you don't feel as bad. Like, my handwriting also all over the place, dude. Like, it's
pretty similar to mine, I'd say.
You are embracing. I love that you have embraced it, because you know what, I really think the fact that you've added the words melon grab, fucking, like, I could have probably in my mind, like, put as a skater, put 2 and 2 together, he's grabbing his melon grab, you know.
Yeah, but
other people might not get that, so I think you adding your little handwriting and your spin on it really adds.
Yeah, it took a while not to be self-conscious about it. I mean, I'm not writing in my work all the time, but when I do,
Dude, how was that? Like, especially coming through uni, this element of, I mean, there's an institutional requirement to have a level of, you know, writing and stuff like that. And were they able to embrace that? Look, man, these are my strengths, and these are areas that, you know, whatever. How were they with that?
To be fair, like the illustration course at UWE is pretty relaxed with everything like that. Like they're very you just do what you want with your sketchbook, that's just yours. If you're doing random scribbling writings then they don't really mind. Like they're not that, I don't know, it's not very academic and that such. Like they wouldn't like they wouldn't worry about that kind of thing. Just more of a personal worry than my lecturers or something putting that on me.
Nice. So do you use any of the like the digital like iPad, Wacom pad or anything like that?
No, not at all really. I use Photoshop. So I do colour it all digitally. Me and my housemate recently, we split like a Wacom tablet between us. And I've just kind of started using that, but mainly just for, I don't know. I haven't used it for drawing at all. I've used it more for like, I don't feel like I'm at the level yet where I'd be good at it. So I'm just kind of practicing, like when I'm on Photoshop or like Illustrator, I'll just use it to like select the tools and stuff to help me get the hand-eye coordination with it. But maybe at one point.
Yeah, I was going to say, I literally on Friday was at a small gathering with some friends, and one of them is a tattoo artist, and she did do some stuff on Wacom pad and is now transitioned to iPad. And she was like, having to use a Wacom pad is like having to learn how to redraw, because you're looking here, but you're like drawing somewhere and like somewhere down here. So it becomes a much harder issue in terms of like eye hand coordination. So it's a really good point. That's now two people that have said that to me. So I wonder how artists are kind of like, if that's a big thing that Wacom are like taking into consideration when they're making.
Yeah. It's definitely a learning curve. I know they do tablets that
you could draw.
They have their own version of like an iPad. They are keeping up with kind of times.
Yes. Okay. No. Well, that's cool, man. So you've been like getting used to it. So with Photoshop before that, so. I just kind of clocked, I guess, what you meant. I thought you did like more sketchy kind of drawings and then finished off like on some sort of Wacom. And I'll get, so you did full solid line drawings, scan the line drawing and then fill it with color basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll do everything like the texture and everything just by hand. And then I will kind of go in, and then anything that involves color, I then just add the colors on top.
In Photoshop and Instagram. I mean, Photoshop and Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
dude, I love it. You're like, if there was like a sword maker, you know, there's new guys like power benches and shit. You're the traditional samurai with like the wet stone, and you're like, and stuff. I love it, dude. It's so interesting to see someone who does the digital, like posts it digitally, but creates it manually. That's awesome to me.
Yeah. Cheers. Thank you. I mean, any time. Comparing me to a samurai, I will happily accept that comparison any day. Yeah.
No, dude, I think it's awesome what you're doing with it, for sure. I think doing that, and also it keeps it alive. Like, you know how people like records, like people who love listening to records and how to collect records and stuff, like they're just trying to preserve something that exists. I'm sure you might transition more into Wacom at some point, or but dude, at the moment, you're keeping something alive that is, at this point in society, drifting a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it is a very similar thing in DJing, where you get a huge, like, everyone's gone digital now. They use, like, CDJs and, like, controllers and stuff like that. But then you have a huge proportion, well, a smaller proportion of people that still use, like, vinyl. Just out of, like, some people say that, it's a huge divided opinion. Some people that play vinyl say that like using like digital is like cheating and stuff like that. But I know people that say that they just purely love the tactile quality of like picking out a vinyl and like going through, like you're actually, instead of like scrolling through like a crate, you've got a crate. Mm-hmm. I mean, and then you're going through and you're picking out and you're just putting it on and something more. Because I like to kind of get into vinyl DJing for that aspect of it. kind of like a similar thing of enjoying the pen to the paper.
So we sort of made a list, a hierarchical list, and illustration is, you know, at the top of your list as far as your, you know, your attention and your priority, and DJing is right up there too. That talked to us a little bit about, so you're doing a little bit of like LP analog DJ and stuff, but what got you into doing DJing?
It's kind of silly, really. In college, me and a good mate of mine, Jake Radford, me and him used to spend like our lunch times making music. Like, so that kind of came before. He was doing music, like production. It would have just been called music back in college. And so he kind of knew all the technical stuff. And I just kind of sit and like watch and try and join in a little bit. And he'd show me like how to click it around. But we'd make we'd make weird, really bad electronic music with like memes sampled in it, like Ainsley Harriott and kind of like Michael Rosen, if you know those guys. But yeah, like, yeah. So we just make just silly tunes. And one day I was thinking, we had made like, I don't know, we made quite a few, like 8 tracks. And I was like, what if we ever wanted to play these live? I don't know why anyone in the world would want to listen to Ainsley Harriott and Michael Rosen meme music. But I was like, I should start to learn. One of us should DJ. If he's like better at making the music, maybe I should learn to play the music. And then, I started trying to learn how to DJ because of that.
What were you guys doing it on? What were you guys doing the memes on?
It was on like Logic Pro X. So we'd like find like just a weird video of like someone like Ainsley Harriott on YouTube, and then we'd like cut out their like audio, and then we'd sample it in the tracks. So it was just like meme orientated music.
Amazing. Yeah. So it started with memes, and it then bordered DJing, as it tends to happen.
Yeah.
So now, what's your driving force with DJing? And obviously, you talked about vinyl versus, you know, like more digital stuff. Are you working more with like digital? Do you have a setup?
Yeah.
We don't know much about DJing at all, but what's your setup? Give us like the lowdown of kind of what it.
I've got quite a nice setup at home, luckily. It's it's just CDJs, like it's and it's all USB, so you like put your tunes on a USB and then you plug a USB on and they'll all be on there. And then you can have like 2 USBs in at a time and then like
nice.
Do it that way. But yeah, nowadays I'm playing a real mix of music. I'm kind of playing drum and bass music. I run a drum and bass night called Digestive Chamber in Bristol. Mm-hmm. With my mates Noah and Oscar, and that's all drum and bass, dubstep kind of, and then sometimes you have a bit of house and garage. So I'll play that kind of music with them, and then me and my girlfriend, we play like, you know, the stuff that I've been producing, more like breakbeat, kind of like slower tempo kind of stuff, and then I'll play that with her. So like a real mix of stuff.
So is Care your girlfriend? Is the audio your girlfriend in that?
In the Care track, no, that is a friend of a friend. But she does do like, she does Nicole Clark, if she's listening on off by chance, amazing vocalist. Hit her up for all your stuff. But she does do like a lot of like some of like the vocals in the tracks that I've got on there.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's super dope, man. So in terms of the DJing stuff, you said, you know, you're working with electronic stuff and you're making one genre for your night. Where are you hosting that somewhere in Bristol? Is that like, obviously with COVID, has that been shut down? Where have you
been? we haven't really done anything since COVID. But it's just in like kind of small venues around Bristol. We try and not stick to the same venue more than once, just to keep it kind of fresh and keep it moving.
That's dope.
Where have you, just so for folks that are watching and when things open up again, where are some of the places that you've gone to in the past? And you said it was Thursday nights?
We'll do it. We try and aim for weekends, but we'll kind of do, if it's like a special event like Halloween or something like that, we'll do it midweek. Nice. We have done it at Take Five. We've had some really good events at Take Five. We get on with the owner really well. Basement 45, we were hoping to do a Halloween event this year, because the Halloween event last year, it was really good. It was like a sellout night, and just the headliner was really good, and it was just a good time. So we're hoping to do one this year, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
It might. It might happen. Yeah. Like, I'm picturing Halloween with just everyone in hazmat suits, right?
Yeah, that would be one fancy dress that everyone can wear. That's it.
No.
That's cats going. You can't hear that, no. Okay.
So that's fucking, so for me, when I've been in Bristol like all this time, I've gone to like a few of the nights that are around. I've gone to, you know, the typical places you go and find electronic music in Bristol, you know, Lakota, you know, the typical like ones around the city where you can go. I've really struggled with finding good electronic music that I at least enjoy.
Yeah.
I will definitely, when it opens back up, be coming to your nights now that I know they exist.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. What kind of music are you into, like electronic wise?
It's a great question. So that's such a great question. For me, typically, I like drum and bass or dubstep that has movement to it. I'm really not a fan of like drum and bass that is just the consistent, like, you know what I mean? The typical, like the whole time. And it just continues with that. And you're like, it's been 3 hours and
yeah,
not really changed. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I like variation. I like decent drops. I like stuff. But typically I like stuff that's more what I would describe as grungy. Stuff that like makes you go like, ooh. Like,
yeah.
Like a bit of bass that you're like, fuck, like that hits me like in the soul, where it's like really like deep and heavy. So for like nights out, that's more what I listen to. But then in my spare time, I listen to more of the stuff that you post on SoundCloud, more of the like chill lo-fi, like that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You might like Halftime Drum and Bass. Okay. I don't know. It's just dropped right down to like 87 BPM. But it's still got a really sounds like drum and bass. But yeah, it's just like breaks it up. Like in a set, if you do like drop a halftime tune in a drum and bass set, it really like would break up the rhythm kind of that you were saying. Because the tempo just drops right down, but the basses are all still the same and can kind of be quite like wubby. It's good. Yeah.
Nice.
How's it feel, dude, to do electronic music in Bristol? Because Bristol's a pretty like, it's a really vibrant scene, right?
Yeah. I've met so many amazing people through electronic music. That's probably like one of the best things about it, I'd say, with the people that kind of we've met like doing this. Like I've made some really good friends, and all the like feedback and like is really like positive, and everyone, like every time we put on a night, like the crowd's always really good and like just get into it. I think like drum and bass is just so big in Bristol that and people love it so much that if there's drum and bass playing, people will come and they will really enjoy it, and it just creates an all-round like happy atmosphere.
We've talked about this before, as far as like a live experience, like a good drum and bass night. I mean, there's different types of music and you appreciate them for different situations, but as far as like really connecting with a crowd in a music situation, electronic music is one of those that is just, it just can do it. Like another is like maybe jam bands that just like, you know, long, whatever, like improvisational riffs and stuff like that. That's really cool that have, but both of them have consistent like building and dropping, and then building the crowd back up, and then dropping again. And all of that just feels like, I mean, that's incredible. Like, if they get it right with the right crowd, it's like you so euphoric, you know, it's like a drug, right? And then, you know, typically there are, you know, there are drugs involved as well, which probably, you know, like multiply the experience. But no, dude, when it's right, there's not a lot out there in the world that's better than a night like that, is there?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I'd 100% agree with that. It's really, it's such a shame that's not going on right now as well. I'll try not to get too much into that. a good DJ set is amazing. Really good.
It leaves memories. It leaves something that like lasts with you for, like, I guess I was gonna say, like, another genre that really does that as well is heavy metal, I find, as well, even though it's like a completely different type of music in terms of like fucking in your face kind of thing, it also the crowd moving. There's very few genres of music that you'll have, like, if you go to like an indie band and you look out in the crowd, there's one guy like swaying like a little bit, and otherwise everyone's kind of just stood around listening. And I think you're totally right. Like, I was going to say, I saw Cohen Sound, who are like Bristol, like bass dudes, really early days in their career. We saw them actually when they opened for Skrillex when I was super young, went to go see Skrillex when I was younger. And they opened for him. And I will never forget that set. I've never seen a crowd go from like zero to fucking crazy in like half a song and be like, and they were nobodies at that time. So to me, it was just bonkers that the crowd went that.
Yeah.
It was such a great experience. I think DJing really is one of the few things that can do that.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Oh, you go. My granddad's phone's just going off. All these sounds are distracting me.
I was going to say, you said, Bo, do you remember it? And it's like, for me, it's more than like an actual memory of a scene, but it's like as much a feeling, like of what, you know, what you, and it is sort of like a, I don't know, for me it's kind of like a wave feeling, and then like this euphoric ride type thing, and less about visual memory than about sort of like body memory, you know, type thing. There's something about that. Yeah, very cool. And I think you're right, like a good bouncy metal gig also has that as well. I mean, like, as long as you come out with fairly few lingering injuries, it's a good night, right?
Yeah. The thing with like heavy kind of like music like that is it shares like a similar thing with like drum and bass and jungle. With like the drums, they like the highs of the like track, like as in like the big parts, like I get the word wrong, like, you know, the crescendo or whatever, where they're going, absolutely going for it. It's such a contrast between like the start of the song where they're kind of just like, you know, kind of building up into it. Like the difference between those can be so contrasting, you know, like compared to like other genres or something like
that. I love it. Yeah.
That, yeah.
Yeah. You're totally right. And it's, you know, it's really interesting because, and Tom, I love that you said, you know, it's like body memory. Like something that I will never forget is, at like Glastonbury, at my first time at Glastonbury, I can't even remember who the DJ was, for untold reasons. And I just remember being in the crowd, and like it felt like 1,000 people all moving in unison, like everyone, like moving left to right to the back to like, and like you're squished, so you're just like, okay, whatever, I'm going, you know, like. And I don't remember the music, who it was, but I tell you what, I really remember one set that first time at Glastonbury that I got like moved around as part of the crowd, and it was one of those like body feel experiences that was so memorable because it was great music that everyone was loving.
There's something about, like, I mean, you like take yourself out of you know, the knowledge that we're humans and go back into like we're actually animals that have evolved with this mind and this like capacity to be something more than animals. But like back then, like that all started with just like a stick or a rock and, you know, like something that would resonate and evolve. Yeah, exactly. But it's
stretched
like,
it
stretched out a deer skin that we could then like, yeah, do some other types of beats. But it's like, it tapped into a part of our brains that have also evolved past like other species. Like there's very few species. Like you'll see a parrot, like, you know, like rock into something like really in a weird way on a YouTube video. But how many like, how many other animals like really can be affected in a way that almost feels chemical in your brain that like humans do? It's a weird like little invention that we stumbled upon. And then when you break it down, like you were talking about, there's some specific beats with drum and bass, right? There's different, you know, there's half beats or whatever. There's a structure to it, right? There's some rules that you need to stay within. And that goes with everything. Like with jazz, there's a certain bit, and there's, you know, with all different types of music, you want to stay sort of in that style. And all of those are created as well, just to, and most of it's based around like math, isn't it? Just like, okay, you need to have these sort of beats that are dropping at these sorts of times.
Yeah, with production, like it's very like producing music like on Logic or something like that. They it's very music meets maths. Like like if you're like recording in a band, it's a lot more musical feeling. But when you're actually like programming and like building the sounds and stuff like that and the basses, it's very maths, it's very feels a lot more maths, computer science than like playing an instrument.
Okay. So do you like, you know, you said it feels different. Do you play instruments? Are you like savvy to playing instruments or anything, or are you just rocking the electronic stuff?
I used to like do guitar lessons and stuff, like just acoustic guitar lessons, which helps me a little bit with kind of music theory. But at the moment, like I would really like to get into like keyboard and like playing the piano, because if you can do like play the keyboard really well, it helps so much like with production, because you can just lay in like stuff just straight off, like how you're playing it and stuff like that. Like right now, like I have to try and learn and look at the key of it, like keys and scales and stuff like that, and it feels very much like I'm building the track out of Lego bricks rather than like playing like, oh, I know this scale, let's just like see what these chords do and just like throw it in. Like it's a lot more slower, like what chords are in those scales and kind of stuff like that. And
dude, that's it's really interesting. And you know, it's one thing that a lot of DJs I've noticed also play the piano. It's something that is a pretty common one. I think that's a really good direction to go. And I think from what it sounds like, dude, I think musically you're very in tune with kind of what's going on with society, but also with yourself, which is very interesting. Like some artists I've met are very pulled and conflicted with, you know, what's going on outside in the world in terms of, you know, what they feel societally they want to produce. But it feels like, dude, your music, from just how you talk about music in general and how you want to, feels very pure. And from me listening to it as well, it sounds very, I guess, filled with passion, I guess, would be a weird way to put it. There's no like specific word for that. You know what I mean?
Well, I do really enjoy it. It would be something that I would like to pursue further.
Yeah.
But, I've been really tempted to do, because I've just finished my degree now. Like, I want to just do a few years just doing like my art and like whatever work I need or get. But go back and do like a music, like, either a music foundation degree or like sign up to do 3 years at uni, but plan to drop out after the first one, just to kind of like get the basics down, just like, and like actually, because I didn't do music at school or anything like that. So it might be nice just to like sit down and like spend a year focusing on like music.
Dude, so we've talked about a little bit like with music about the audience buzz of creating. There's also a creator buzz, like, and so for me, you know, I've dabbled in some writing in my life, and just like being able to have a sentence that you just love how that just flowed and how it fit in, or just maybe a paragraph that captured stuff. You've done it now. You have two mediums basically with your illustration stuff and your DJing stuff. And there's moments, right, that like you've created something that's new, that wasn't there like, you know, 10 minutes or a half an hour ago. There it is.
Yeah.
Whether it's a beat or, you know, some sort of drawing. Compare those. How is that?
Well, yeah, no, creating something that wasn't there, something that's new and is just there in front of you, is such a rewarding experience, you know. Like, the difference between the reward between art and music, I'd say, personally for me, the drawings that I make, even if they take like 3 days, it's a much quicker reward. Like, you've sat down, you've thought it through, you've sketched it out. But when it comes to creating a track, like some of those tracks I've been working on for like a year, 2 years, like it's a very slower burn to create something. But then once it's finished and you've actually finished it, it's there in front of you, it's a kind of a bigger reward as such, like something that would take 2 years rather than 3 days to complete. Yeah, that's I guess how I would compare the two if I could.
Okay. So it's almost like the music is your like emotional soul, and if people rip that one out the art. Yeah. 2 years on this fucking song though, I swear to God.
It's okay, it's not too bad. Like the level where I'm at, it's by the time I finish a track, I've learned stuff over the previous ones that I'm kind of like, you know, like at the moment for me, it's just learning. Like it takes 2 years to learn, but at the start, like I had no idea, like even like what I was putting together. And then by the end, I'm like, okay, I've got a bit of a better idea now. And then like next track I release, it's like, oh, that old track, that's, I can hear what's wrong with it now, but it's kind of released. So,
dude, yeah. With what you mentioned, finishing a track or finishing a piece, like that's tricky, isn't it? Like, there's an element of, is it finished? I could always add more to it, right? And at times when I add more to it, it enhances it. At other times when I add more to it, it kind of messes up the purity of what I originally had created, whether it's music or with art. Talk about that like moment of like deciding when it's absolutely finished.
That is a very, very good question. With either of them, you could keep tweaking forever. Like then they're not, that's the hardest part about I found it being at uni, was that this work, they set you like a deadline. And if you don't say to yourself at one point in time, this needs to be finished, you could just keep working on the same thing forever and not finish anything. But when I get bored of it, eventually I'll just get like, I'll be like, I can't do any more on that. Like I need to move on to something else, and I will have to call it a day and then upload it. Or with music, that like when you produce, there's kind of like three main stages. Get all the ideas down and like kind of get a general groove together, and then you'll do like a mix down, and then that's where you kind of want all the levels and everything right, sounding right. And then after that point, after the mix down, you either try and master it yourself really badly, which I've tried a few times, or you send off for someone to master it good.
Okay.
And then once it's sent off, that's it. Like you can't, when it's when you get the master back, then that's it, done.
So what are they doing when they're mastering it?
So really it's kind of like it's like polishing off, it's the fine tuning of the track. Like if you picture it like kind of like carving like a wooden animal out of a piece of wood. Like if you had the piece of wood and you kind of like drawing out the image on a piece of wood, that would kind of be like getting the groove down, and then like chiseling it out would be like the mix down, and then the master would be like sanding it off. Like if you don't master it, like the levels are really low, like the sound's really low, and it's just kind of once you've sent it off to get mastered, it's compressed into like one audio file. like you're not you can't move anything around or anything like that. It's making sure like the bass, mids and highs are all good and like stuff like that, and there's no like silence on either side of the track. It's just like minute things, but you do like a lot of these minute things and it can really bring the song out.
It reminds me, Bodes, of like it's the equivalent of when you're in an editing suite.
I was about to say
you know like color correcting or moving the levels of the audio slightly, or just changing the transitions just a little. It's these little tiny tweaks, right? And then you hit the render button, and then it's, you know, that's baking it all together.
Sorry. Yeah. Do you know what? That's so funny. I was going to say, going back to a second ago, Kels, when you said, you know, you've been spending time learning as you go. For me, like as someone who makes like film projects in my spare time, I've been doing the same thing with Final Cut and with loads of different editing softwares over the years. And I've like had to relearn and blah, blah, blah. And it is literally that, like you said, it is one of those processes where if you're not going to a class and someone's teaching you it, it's like, cool, what do I want to do this time that I didn't do last time that's going to be different that I need to learn, basically? And so like, might be like, oh, I need to do this transition this way because that's how I want this to look. Or, you know, I want to make, like Tom said, I want to do color correcting like better. I want to make sure that I, you know, whatever it may be, it's literally, I'm sat there and I go, do I know how to do that? No, I fucking don't. I'm going to go to YouTube and I'm going to look up how to do that. And I'm
gonna,
once I've got the tutorial down, then I'm going to tailor it to my own style and exactly how I want it. But of course, I do take the bare bones and I'm learning each time with each video on the go. And like you said, it's so funny when you upload something and then you make the next one and you look back and you're like, oh, that's so painful. You're like,
That's good. If you're doing that though, it's good. It does mean that you're progressing. There is that thing of like, oh, do I like remove that content or delete it because you realize the mistakes you've made. But most of the time I'll leave something up because if your new work's better than your old work, then like some of the older stuff like I've got on my Instagram, I don't think it's as good as the stuff I'm making now. But I personally enjoy going back and like looking at my older stuff, and sometimes you can look back at it and still learn something again, like from how you used to make, like, if that makes sense. If you can compare the two, if you can look at your old work and your new work, you can really see like, oh, I've done that, like, so then maybe if I keep doing that, then it will progress it even further, if that makes sense.
What I found this as well is like early on you're having fun with the new stuff that you're learning, right? And you're like turning those dials just a little bit too much, right?
Yeah.
Of like the technology that you're learning. And then you look back and you're like, that could have just been so, like, it seems like you simplify, you streamline your processes a lot more. So like, for instance, in editing, you can just go crazy with transitions and have them do really fun and creative things. But really, at the end of the day, that kind of takes away in filmmaking from the actual story. So as you move on, you move away from like, you know, amusing yourself with, you know, with some sort of like proficiency you have in the technology to really understanding, okay, so what am I doing here? I don't want to actually distract from the story. So this transition actually needs to be really simple just to get into the neck, you know, that type of thing. So your whole mindset continues to evolve as well. I'm sure it's the same with music.
Yeah, for sure.
Nice. Yeah.
It's a really weird process creating as a whole. I'm sure you would agree, Tom, you know, being a creative person is so complicated in the process of learning all the way through to then producing and then beating yourself up about the product, you know. And I think, do you know what's interesting? I think it's a good segue that I think is really nice is going into skating. Something that we as skaters, so I skate as well, Kels, I'm not sure I'll mention that to you. It's learning how to fail and learning how to like learn from your like tiny mistakes, like the small little things that you like mess up on. For me, like when I'm learning a trick, it's like the minute foot movements, the like whether I'm focusing on which foot I'm doing, the like all that kind of stuff. And I
think, certainly, for sure,
it definitely ends up helping my creative side. Do you find skating has ended up helping your creative process?
Maybe with like resilience to failure, because skating is so much failure. Like it takes, like even like with learning to ollie, like it can take you 2 months of just feel it. Like it's so unsatisfying when you don't land a trick as well. So it's like 2 months of just like most unsatisfying like feeling of just like the board not doing what you want it to do, and then eventually you'll get one. So I think in that sense, like just sticking at something, I think maybe it has helped my creativity in that aspect.
Yeah. Do you know what, something that I then wanted to bring up in terms of creativity and skating? So I've looked at your kind of skating and the way that you, the stuff that you've posted on the internet. Typically, from what I see, dude, your skating is what I would class in the more like creative genre of skateboarding. So there's stuff that people, you know, there's like the Nigel Houstons, the Jamie Foys, the dudes who are like contest skaters who can hit a rail every time. They're not falling. They're badasses. Yeah. Then you've got people like, you know, Richie Jackson, William Spencer, you know, Jason Park, you know, Johnny Geiger, all these dudes who are doing weird, more creative kind of interesting stuff. What kind of inspires you with your skating? Where are you finding your, like, when you're doing some of these tricks, for example, like in Tom, I'm not sure if you can bring it up on the screen share, but there's one clip on your Kells highlight where you do a line and you do this beautiful flatland 360, and then you actually 360 body varial, like just jump in 360 body varial. And I've not seen anyone do that before, just for shits and giggles in the middle of a line. I fucking love that. Like, what that kind of shit? I mean, one-footed pump tracking. What the fuck?
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, just silliness, just all-round silliness. I do enjoy, I'm not very good at like flip tricks at all. Like I really struggle with them. So it's just stuff that I kind of naturally find is a bit a bit more comfortable for me, and just trying just new stuff.
That's the one. There you go. Flatland 360. 360.
Oh, yeah, I do.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Hippie jump. These are all like the creative tricks. You're getting them all in one line. I love it.
Yeah.
And then Wally off the little block at the end. Ooh, nollie front. Yeah, that's fucking.
Yeah, nollie big spin. That's like my go-to trick if I was going to like
destroy me in a game.
Like, yeah, if I was going to just do something, it'd probably be a nollie big spin on something. Yeah. It's like what I find like the most comfortable trick that I find.
That's super interesting, dude. That's such an interesting trick to be the one that's like your go-to.
Yeah, I've got a lot of mates that like don't like it when I do that trick.
That tray flip. Right, explain that to me. Right, Tom, can you replay that one for me?
Okay.
I need to see that one again. So what you do, just press the back arrow, yeah.
This one?
What is that?
Okay, that's like a fakey lottie spin, I guess. I was skating with this guy, Dave Side, and I can do them regular. And we were just like chatting about them. And we were like, have you ever done it fakey? And we were like, no. And then we just spent like some time doing it fakey.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was so happy with that because I can't do flip tricks. I was so gassed.
Shove with a body varial, like what are you doing?
So the board does a 180 and you do a 360, so you kind of like do like a half cab, and you kind of you do a half cab, but your back leg kind of does the same thing as like a fakie ollie body varial, but you turn like, so it pops it away from you, and then you just turn your shoulders a bit extra more. And you try and get 360 of your body.
Do you know what, dude? I think body varials, like for me, I think body varials being chucked into tricks is one of the most underrated parts of skating. For me, like kickflip body varial is one of my favorite tricks to do. And it, like, when I do it, I feel like a fucking gangster. Like, I come away like, fucking yes, it's crazy.
That's called like a disco flip.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah. Incredible. A disco flip.
Yeah, mate. Fuck it. It's like, for me, I think with like that kind of stuff, I really enjoy the weird creative part of skating as well. Like, I've really been working on like my boneless game is one that I'm like really proud of. Obviously, in a game of skate, not allowed or whatever. But I love, I fucking love like bonelesses, and I'm like all over that kind of weird stuff. So, I wanted to ask you, you said you're struggling with like flip tricks. Are you then pretty much living solely in like the shove-its kind of era, whatever? Like, have you got shove-its in every stance at this point?
Yeah, I do, but I should I'm trying to do more flip tricks, like, just because all the guys that I skate with in Bristol are so good. Like, they've got so many different kind of like flip tricks in like every stance and stuff like that, and it really does like encourage you to try and like actually try it and kind of, even if I suck at it majorly, it does encourage me to try those. So I try not to stay in my comfort zone of like shove-its and spinning. I'm a spinning guy, I've been told. I go this way, but my board doesn't spin the other way.
That's so sick. I think you know, flip tricks are, again, something that people never, this is a really good segue actually into a question I wanted to ask you about in terms of learning to skate and whatnot. With learning flip tricks, you know, for me, understanding like, and I found that there was no content anywhere. Everyone just goes, so you pop the board and you slide your foot and you flick the bastard. And you're like, right, okay, that's exceedingly unspecific. There's like, there's very little, like, obviously I can see what you're doing in a video, but understanding the mechanics of that aren't always that easy. So for me, learning flip tricks became a case of, finally, when I understood flick upwards, someone was like, oh, you've got to flick your foot up rather than just out, flick up. I was like, oh, and then suddenly, like, I started landing like kickflips and a few other things, but like, that came actually from me watching Skateboarding Made Simple, which is being made by Braille Skateboarding at the moment. I'm not sure if you've heard. Have you heard much about Braille and what they're doing?
Yeah, like, I've heard of them. Like, I know there's like a big like scene for like kind of like YouTube kind of skate. There's like a pocket in skateboarding of like YouTube like skaters kind of thing.
Yeah, I actually wanted to ask because obviously what they're doing at the moment, their whole thing is, don't get me wrong, I'm not super privy to their content. I enjoy the fact that they're pushing skateboarding to the masses and teaching people how to skate. But I wanted to ask you, how do you feel about the YouTuber versus the whole pro skater thing? There's a lot of YouTube skaters that are now pros that the pros who are like legit come up through the ranks don't really consider them as like equals and whatnot. Where do you kind of stand on that whole thing?
I'd say that there are people like YouTube skaters that are getting like pushed up to pro, even though they're not at the same level as someone who's like a lot better than them, and they put a lot. Well, I don't know if they put a lot more work in it because I just don't know them, but they're at a higher level and they're not pro. But I guess from like a company standpoint, they're making these people pro because if they've got like, I don't know, like 500,000 to a million followers on YouTube, if they make a pro board that goes out, they're going to sell a lot of those boards compared to someone that is just, you know, at the skate park every day, headphones in, doesn't really talk to themselves. I mean, or you know, like even people that just like they're really good, they're like the just chilling all the time at the park, don't really leave, way better, they're just not going to sell as many boards. I don't know, it's more of a business thing, isn't it, really? I guess
It's an interesting point because a lot of skaters typically are emotionally bound by that. Typically when I've asked skaters in the past, like, some are like, no, fuck the YouTube guys. And other people are like, yeah, we're all skaters, you know, kind of thing. So I think the business point is one that doesn't really ever get brought up with that. And I think it's a really good point that at the end of the day, business-wise, and not only that, like I said a second ago, with Braille getting skateboarding to the masses, a lot of people watch YouTube. a lot of people, you know, are following people like, you know, John Hill, Aaron Cairo, Garrett Gaynor, Chris Chan, you know, those kinds of people who are the YouTube skaters. And you're right, for companies in the skate community to employ those people or to utilize the fact that they do have ridiculous followings makes sense. At the end of the day, there's no bad decision there. Like, if you're going to sponsor someone who has got, like you said, millions of followers, then hell yeah, their signature shoe, their pro model of whatever, whether it be a shoe or a board or fucking whatever, is going to sell a whole lot better. And you're totally right. What I hadn't even really thought about, actually. So I fully think that's a great point, man.
On like a, from the perspective, oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
From like the perspective, like I was a pro, like not a pro skater, but if I was at a point where I wanted to be pro and there was someone else that had got what I've been trying to get for like years and years because they've got like a really high following, it almost then would feel like a popularity contest, and I probably would be quite pissed off. But
that makes sense. Yeah,
you can see why it happens, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah,
there's different considerations, and I think it's probably unfair to group all YouTube skaters as YouTube skaters.
Yeah, right?
Because there are some. So there's some that are playing the game, right? That will just try to, you know, do a trick or do some sort of video capture of something that they know is going to be attracted by people that like skating, people that don't know skating, but would just, for whatever reason, it's clicky and they like it. So there are definitely those guys, and they're kind of chasing something completely different than learning how to skate at a level across, you know, different stances and, you know, fakie and, you know, everything. But there's definitely some YouTube skaters that tick all the boxes that, you know, up and coming, you know, authentic skaters, you know, they love skating. They just happen to throw a camera out, you know, and do it often. So you gotta be careful with it, right? Don't you think?
Well, yeah, if you've found someone that it takes all the boxes, then that's the gold mine for a company, I guess. Like that's what they'd be looking for. Someone that can bring in revenue and isn't like at a pro skating level, then yeah.
Who's like that? Who's like that these days, would you guys say?
I'm not too clued up on that kind of side of it, but yeah.
I would say probably people who are being legitimized within the community, I guess. And also there's a difference because there's YouTube skaters and there's also like Instagram skaters. Like, I'm not sure if you've kind of seen that, Kels. Like, for example, there's a guy called Jamie Griffin who I don't think does much on YouTube or anything else, but he's fucking madly famous within the skate community. Barracks post his shit like all the time. And like people like him are like Instagram ones. But for example, someone like Johnny Geiger, I would put in the YouTube skaters, who's a guy who's worked from fucking nothing, who's worked his way up, who at this point is inventing tricks. And to me, if you're inventing tricks, you're fucking a pro, like you're in that pro category 100%. And these aren't like, it's not like he's inventing like a weird, like, oh, do some like Casper, double fucking Casper, rotate, blah, blah, this kind of shit. He's actually doing complicated flip tricks that are new. He's doing like Sigma flips and shit that he's inventing. I would put him possibly in that category because he's also recognized by the skate community as someone who is a fucking badass for just the level of skill that he has, maybe. But there's very few, Tom. Honestly, like the YouTube and skate, I would say there's quite a disparity between the two in terms of how the skate community views it.
What about what about Vinny Bond? Because he sort of was discovered on YouTube, but would you say he's just a YouTube? But he seems to be now transferring over, or no?
He was sponsored by a very small company early on, so he's more like, I would say he's more traditionally independent kind of thing, because he's more he more got featured in YouTube videos. It's not that he creates YouTube content himself. It was their NKA videos, I want to say. Picked him up, and also so did Braille, and between the two of them, they like, his career popped, and then I think he got Trick of the Year, for like SLS or Thrasher a couple years ago, and that was about it. But I wouldn't put him in the YouTuber category for sure.
Yeah.
With the Instagram skaters thing, there's a guy called Versace Plug, who he's so good. He is absolutely incredible, and he's like Instagram, I guess, like Instagram famous or whatever. He's got a huge following in Instagram, and even that, he released a part, and it got like way, way, way more traction than another one. But his skating is just his skating is incredible. Such good style.
Don't his flair, dude. When oh god, his like ghetto birds and his like oh, I don't even know. Yeah, he's always like hands down, and you're like, how are you just swagging out these crazy fucking tricks? Like it's just.
Yeah.
What's your setup, Kels?
I was about to, what companies are you rocking?
Well, I've got a Route 1 blank because I can't afford anything else apart from that. But if I wasn't having a Route 1 blank, I would have a Palace, Isle, Weekend, Magenta, one of those. And 825. I tried to go up to 85, but it was a bit too thick. So 825 on the deck. And then Indies, just like bog standard Indies. I was getting a pair of Hollows, which I my good friend, he had a wheel stuck on a pair of Indies and he couldn't get it off. Like it had defreaded and meshed and like the bolt on so hard that he was like, if you can get the bolt off, you can have these trucks. And I was living with him at this point, and we had like a gas cooker, so I stuck the end of the truck in the gas cooker, and then it like really, really heated up till it was like red, like hot, and then just like knocked it off with like a big like ratchet spanner thing, and I got it off. So I was skating those for like 6 months, but I was using the same bolt, so eventually the wheel just kept falling off. But yeah, I would skate Hollows if money wasn't an option. So just regular standard Indies. Bones Reds, I'm pretty sure that's kind of standard globally for all skaters pretty much. And then I think I've got Bones Wheels.
That's it's interesting. I was going to actually say so. I also skate Hollows, but I skate Thunder's Hollows. And... I have the same fucking problem. Like, it feels like with just Hollows, they roll and the threading around the wheels gets fucking destroyed. I've not really had that problem with solid, not hollow trucks, I guess.
Heavier, yeah.
It seems that the hollow ones seem to, like, fucking the tiny little bit of bolt that sticks out the end of the wheel just gets fucked. I've had, like, when I've been traveling, so I've been traveling twice and I take my board with me when I go traveling. Twice when I've been traveling, I've had to try and find a skate shop somewhere so they can rethread my fucking truck so that I can get wheels on and off. If I need to like change a wheel, like I blew a wheel while I was in Australia and I needed to get a fucking new one and I couldn't get it off. So I was like, fuck.
Yeah. How'd you blow a wheel? That sounds like it popped like a tire.
Do you know what? I've actually had two weird instances of that very recently. So one was maybe a couple years ago when I was in Australia. I literally did a kickflip, and I guess what I had done earlier is a bit of glass had like sliced the wheel and had made like one bit, like I guess still connected, but like not like not really secure to the wheel. So then I kickflipped, landed, and I must have landed right on the bit that had been sliced by the glass, and it just exploded. Like it fucking
flew out.
And it just, the whole wheel just like exploded off basically. And I was like, fuck. And then the more recent one, I was actually around the corner from our house here in Bristol. And I literally did the same fucking thing. I think I was doing a fakie varial flip at the time. And I landed and again, it popped. But this time it was super weird. I actually think, where's that wheel? I've got it somewhere. I'm not sure if I've got it in here.
It's downstairs.
It might be downstairs. Oh wait, no, I know where he's
dude, I know Bodhi swears by Etnies. He's got some Jocelyns that are like they got a Michelin tread on them, and they seem to last longer than others. Do you swear by any shoes, or do you?
Recently, I have a pair that I've been skating at the moment. The Ennies that I've been skating are really good, but Huff were pretty good before they went out of business. Anything, if I can get a rubber toe cap on my shoe, then that's ideal.
Standard wheel, got cloud Richter clouds, like 54s, and this is the axle from the inside of the wheel with my bearings still stuck inside. So I landed the varial flip, and that stayed on my truck, and this came off.
I've never seen that happen before. So the wheel like ripped apart.
Yeah. So like, I'm not sure if you can see. One sec. Let me turn my light down.
Quite. I've never seen that happen before.
Like the inside, and then that's the inside of the axle still with the bearing stuck inside.
Yeah. What wheels were they?
So that's Richter clouds. Typically, I've not really had much of a problem with them. They're actually, so I actually ride really soft wheels because I typically do a lot of filming. So when I'm doing filming, like I want to be super smooth. So I ride like wheels that 78A. So super, super squishy. So I'm not surprised they explode when I'm doing like really heavy stomps. And especially those ones, I'd had those for maybe 6 months at that point. So it's just after time, they just get blown out because they're just not made for it more so.
Yeah.
Shit happens. What were you
doing? Yeah. What can you do, really? It's just, yeah. I've never seen that happen before, though. Super bizarre. Like,
super weird.
We were talking about shoes. I just told Kells that you swear by your Etney Jocelyns and Kells. Anything with a toe cap or maybe old school Huffs.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I swear by Etnies at this point. I, the thing is, I've tried, you know, I've done Nike, I've done Element, I've done ES, I've done DC, I've done like a bunch of all the shoes, and I'm kind of particular about look-wise what I'm looking for, but I found shoes that I've liked in all the companies. But typically, I can blow through a shoe in like, if I wanted to, an afternoon, like of hard working on like flip tricks, I can blow through a shoe easily. And with these Etnies, are the only shoes that have lasted me longer than like 3 months. Like I get like, and it's because they've got suede rubber and then suede underneath as well. So they're indestructible, basically.
The Etnies I've got right now, I've got like plastic in them.
Yeah.
Like they.
Which ones are they, Kels?
They're like, okay, I'm just gonna get on my hobby.
Fucking show and tell, man. This is important shit.
I'm super interested. But no, yeah, fucking weird that my fucking wheel blew out like that. Fucking, it's just a faulty shit sometimes. Like, oh, those are so nice.
I've literally decided to get a new pair now. But they kind of like, they've got plastic in the, I don't know if you can really see that there.
Yeah,
and it's just made them last like way longer. And usually just because of all the pivots and like movie bits that I'm doing, they go through here like way before anywhere else. But yeah, these Etnies, if I could get another pair, I will. So,
mate,
isn't it interesting how like different people's styles will wear completely differently in shoes? Like people, depending on what their game is, they will have just, you know, different parts of their shoes that are going to blow out a lot quicker or wear down a lot quicker. It's so weird.
Oh, dude, I just had a fucking art project idea. Holy shit. Going around and taking photography of fucking skater shoes. That's a fucking incredible idea, dude. So you can get like almost know your skater versus like based off of their shoes. Imagine you got like pro skaters, like a group of like the 10 best pro skaters, like fucking P-Rod, like all the fucking like top dogs of fucking skating, and line up their fucking shoes and see if you could guess whose shoes are whose based off of the wear.
Yeah, probably could, like if they like do more like, I don't know, like hill flips or like more like kick flips and stuff, it'll wear differently like on the shoe.
100%.
Yeah, for sure.
Neen Williams is going to have a fuck-off hole near his heel versus, you know, someone else who's going to have a mad kickflip. You're 100% right. That's a really interesting thing. I've never thought about that.
That would be fun. There's someone else that does that with something where you have to guess who the person is because of, I forget what it is, but anyway, that would be kind of cool. It'd be like investigative work to like look look at the wear and tear and be like, okay, let me just consider whose game would be, you know, like connected to this kind of wear and tear. That's funny.
Yeah. Do you know what, yeah, it's interesting. So Kels, you're in Bristol. What are your main like spots in Bristol? Are you skating specific areas or do you have like your go-to kind of area?
Yeah, like I skate at the Memorial a lot, but I've moved to Easton. I've been skating M32.
Yeah.
And then previously, Dave's Side's probably my number one spot in Bristol that I enjoy. Like Dave's Side on a sunny day is really good. I don't know if you've been there, but it's got like it's got a concrete pump track that's next to it. And then it's the DIY that like runs along there. But yeah, I'd say that's like my favorite spot in Bristol.
Dude, that is so far from Easton. I cannot even.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. If I'm going over there, then it's a special occasion.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're making hella tracks. So I typically, my two main areas, I like the bear pit because it's kind of slanted. And I like to like, I don't know, as I'm doing a line, pick up a little bit of speed. That's kind of fun. Means that like I've got to try and like I try and do like easier tricks at the beginning when it's slow and then try and challenge myself to do like hard flip tricks when it's going fast and fucking eat shit on people. But that one's good. And then also I'm typically at College Green, just because it's literally just outside, like I could like a 2 minute.
Yeah, we've been skating there more recently. Like College Green's like, especially if it's like really hot and sunny, you can just like chill out in the shade and the grass as well.
But
yeah, it's a good, like it's a real classic spot, College Green. Like if you like the thing is to like, if you can ollie one of the benches at College Green, then that's like the thing. Yeah,
I was gonna say, I saw someone do that the other day and like, dude, there's no way. I was like, there's no fucking way I could get over that fucking thing.
Yeah, you gotta have some real good solid pop.
Have you cleared one?
No, maybe one day.
Yeah,
like sure. if I really wanted to and I didn't care about hurting myself and fully committed, then maybe possibly I get over it, but I do care about hurting myself. So that's not gonna happen. My battery's just gone on my laptop and it glitches out if I have the charger in, like it would just lag out completely, like, so I've probably got 5 minutes I'd say of like time left on the old laptop.
We covered most of the ground that we wanted to, mate. So, yeah.
It's been an absolute pleasure, man. And it's been great to talk to you. Especially, you're our first skater on. Like, fucking praise skaters, man. It's great to talk to you about skating.
get some more skaters on. Yeah.
Also, as we're in Bristol, once I've had my surgery and you know, my nether region is better, I'm happy to...
Good luck with that. Good luck.
Thanks, dude. We'll have to go for a skate sometime. We'll have to share some notes and go for a skate sometime. I'd love to do
that. That would be really good, actually. I'd really enjoy that.
Me too. We'll connect over social media and we'll have a message when I'm a bit more able to skate and see if we can sort something out, man.
It's been great.
Shout out anything you want to shout out, anything you're pushing, anything you want people to see.
Shout out to my mum and my dad. Just my Instagram account, Kels_Hayward. That's it.
Kels with two L's, right?
Yeah, two L's, yeah. It's been an absolute pleasure, guys. Good luck with the podcast, and it's really good to like have a catch up and a chat with you.
Yeah, for sure, man. Thank you.
Yeah.
Cheers, Kels.
Been a blast.
It has been. We'll wind down. If you cut out before, we'll know why your batteries die. But we just got a couple things to wind down with.
Of course. Yeah.
Quickly, Tom, before we do lose you, Kels, we're going to give you some messages after this and we'll link up because we're starting like some like stuff that we're doing for our guests after the podcast. So we'll talk to you about all of that and give you some messages in the next couple of minutes.
Okay.
Bring us on, both.
Yeah.
So, thing, guys, as always, Veast.kitchen. Eat some of that great vegan food. Kels, you're a veggie, mate. There's a great new vegan takeaway just opened. You can get it on Saturday or Thursday. They do burgers on Thursdays, and then they do an amazing 3-course meal on Saturday. It's super, super cheap compared to what you're paying for vegan food in Bristol. I'm sure you know what that's like. Check them out. You do have to pre-order. Other than that, Holy Trinity, guys, you know what's up. We want to see you subscribe to the channel. We want to see you like and follow the Facebook page. And finally, guys, share at least one of our podcasts, one of our posts on any of our social media platforms, any of the ones that you're on. Get us out there, get people involved. We're nearly at 500, guys, and all of you have been a part of that. Kels, thank you so much, man. We really fucking appreciate it.
Cheers, yeah, it's been amazing. Yeah. Have a good day.
You too. Yeah.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Chugging through. We're loving doing this stuff, you guys. If you want to support us, if you want to make sure that we can keep getting, you know, better quality set, better quality lights, make the filming better.
Bigger batteries for the camera.
Bigger batteries for the camera.
Yes!
You know, all that kind of stuff. You can do that by just liking, following the page, and subscribing to the YouTube channel. That is what really makes a difference to us.